Tom and I met at work 46, 47 years ago. I do remember exactly what he was wearing the first time I saw him. He was so cute. But, you know, working, he was actually my manager, and I was a department head. And so, you know, we had a lot of conversations, but it was mostly work-related. And the one thing that struck me was he was always patient. He never got rattled. Even one day when a woman walked in wearing a see-through blouse and nothing underneath, all the other guys ran into the warehouse and sent him out. And he very carefully explained to her how a camera worked and the whole thing, and just... And it just amazed me that he could just focus so easily. But getting a date was not the easiest thing. One day we were back in the warehouse. He was on the other side. He didn't even know I was there. And I heard him talking to a friend. And he told me, he said, "Hey, whatever your name is, I hear there's a really good movie at the Sepulveda. You want to go tonight?" It was a Saturday, so we got off early. And he goes, "Nah, I can't. I got to go do this or that." And I can remember the light bulb going on above my head. And so I ran into the office and I told my friend, "I'm going to ask you to go to the movies. Tell me you can't, and I'll tell you the whole thing later." As soon as he walked in the office, I said, "Hey, Jan, yeah, there's a really good movie at the Sepulveda. You want to go with me tonight?" She goes, "No, I can't." Okay, well, maybe I'll go by myself. And he did fall for it, hook, line, and sinker. He goes, "Oh, I'm going there. You can come with me." It wasn't a date. "You can come with me." Well, we went to the movies. We went out to dinner, and we talked until 3 in the morning. And it went from then on. But it goes back further. You have to realize this is 44 years ago. It was an unusual thing for a Caucasian woman to be married to a Japanese man. But for my family, it started many, many, many years before that. I went to the movies. Jen, you've heard the story. You can close your ears. I went to a movie the very first time my father let me go to a movie. And I can remember it was 35 cents a piece at that time. I thought it was expensive. And it was called Sayonara. It was with Red Buttons and the big fat guy that was a godfather, which I can never remember his name.
Marlon Brando,
thank you. And two beautiful Japanese ladies. One was Miyoshi Umeki, who went on to do many other things. And the other was the most amazing woman, and her name was Miko Taka. And I remember crying through this movie and not understanding, because it was a story of post-World War II Japan, where a couple of American GIs fell in love with a couple of Japanese women, and everybody on both sides objected. And I remember going home and asking my dad, "Why? I don't understand. Why?" And I remember my dad sitting back thinking a minute. He goes, "Linda, people are like Christmas presents. They all come in different wrappings, but it's what's on the inside that counts." And I knew then that it was okay, because he was very honest whenever he said something like that, and he did believe it. So for me, it wasn't a big deal. Now, the interesting thing, how God has amazing plans in all of this, was many, many years later, I was driving with Jen. We were in trouble because we were late in getting home. It had been very, very late. And so we were kind of taking our time, and I told her the story, and I said, "I just wish I knew what happened to this beautiful geisha, whether she'd gone back to Japan and become a famous actress." And he said, "Even in back of my mind, I wonder if she ever heard about the Lord." And I remember Jen's response. She gave me that look like, well, she actually said, "Are you kidding?" And I'm embarrassed. "No, I'm not kidding. Linda, that's Auntie Miko." "What? She says that's Jerry's mom. I've known Jerry longer than I've known you." And I can remember this feeling like, when you've got a question for the Lord, he somehow answers it in the most amazing and unusual ways. But I wasn't sure about how Tom's parents would feel. And I found out the most amazing thing, that from the time my mother-in-law was pregnant with my husband, she prayed for the woman he would marry. So when we told them that we were getting married, the first thing she did was look up and say, "Thank you, Jesus. I'll have the daughter I never had." And my father-in-law walked over and kissed me on the cheek and said, "Welcome to our family, daughter." And he called me daughter from that day till the day he died. I think one of the biggest challenges in our marriage was cultural. I'm Danish. You know, breakfast is pastry, and we'll go a little further into that later on. There were so many differences that it was really kind of a struggle for us to start to learn to understand. And one of the most, the biggest things that really came up was we hadn't been married more than a few months, and I was trying to explain something to my husband, and he didn't get it. And I'm frustrated with myself, not with him, because I'm having trouble explaining it. And I remember walking out into the living room, sitting on the floor cross-legged, and I started to cry. And it was just this frustration of not being able to explain what I had to explain. And I remember him sitting across from me, looking at me and saying, "Are you going to divorce me?" And I remember this shock going, "Honey, Danes cry when they're happy. They cry when they're sad. They cry when they don't have anything better to do." That was never the thought. But we knew right then we had to learn how to communicate, because we were coming from such a different background. He had never seen his mother cry. Now, interestingly, I had several times. But she was so careful about protecting that from her children that he thought women didn't cry unless it was tragic. So anyway, the other things that that came about in our life that were so difficult for us included health issues. I think we lost count at about 35 broken bones, and he started it. You know, you guys have, I'm sure, heard about the transplant, ruptured spleens, just a number of issues, which also caused unemployment for long periods of time, which affected us financially.
Yeah, I don't know if many of you heard of Jay Adams, but he is a biblical counselor. He's written a number of just incredible books. And a lot of what he has written is a basis for biblical counseling. And he states that marriage is one of the first institutions created by God from the very beginning. And it's the pressure of marriage has a way of bringing out defects. It's very hard to place, you know, two sinners in a situation, even if they're both redeemed, and expect everything just to go well. It's just very difficult. And you're there, you're with each other every day, day in and day out, and things are going to happen, pressures are going to mount. And let's face it, typically in a marriage situation, you know, guy, girl, you're not really compatible from the true sense. And so it's when the husband and wife can approximate the relationship that Christ had to the church, this is when we can, as Christian couples, exhibit Christ's saving grace and be a good witness to those around us. When we fail, then we're bringing, first of all, we're bringing shame on the name of the Lord. And a lot of times, disharmony in the home is one of the things that gets in the way of our harmony between heaven and the home. So one of the greatest troubles in marriage can be answered on two different levels. One is the ultimate cause level. That is the sinful selfishness, lack of biblical love. A failure to love God and a failure to love others as ourselves. That's very basic. It's basic to almost everything. Unconfessed and unforgiven sin always leads to cover-up and all the different consequences that it brings with it. And it typically brings a breakdown in relationships. on the functional level, marriages have a problem a lot of times with misdirected priorities. You probably hear this a lot. It's kind of a catchphrase, but in our lives, and this is true of our married lives, having the right priorities is critical to the relationship. Communication. I mean, I'm sure all of you already know. You have two completely different people coming together as man and wife. Communications, at best, has to be worked at very diligently. So those are two areas. And couples that may be having troubles or struggles with the marriage, you can probably look at one of those two things, either communication issues or misdirected priorities. And one of the things that this causes is our communication, our personal communication with our Lord. If our communication and our marriage is not working well, it affects our walk and our personal walk. And you have to remember, a lot of times when Linda and I have given this type of session, it's usually with the husbands and the wives. And it mainly because in a marriage situation, the husband carries a fairly large responsibility and burden for the Christ-centered marriage. So it's a little different for us this time because we just have the ladies here. But from a husband's perspective, and it says in 1 Peter 3:7, when a husband refuses to communicate with his wife, God will refuse to hear his communications. So if a husband is not communicating effectively with his wife, his prayer life, his walk is going to be significantly impacted. There's this is the 1 Peter. You husbands, in the same way with your wives, in an understanding way, as
missed a word there.
Way live with your wives in an understanding way, as with someone weaker, since she is a woman, and show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life, so that your prayers will not be hindered. It's pretty straightforward. We Christians have to understand that marriage is of divine origin. If you look at the secular world, what they're telling us, marriage isn't even necessary a lot of times. It's great if you want to have kids, but you don't even have to be married to have kids. So the secular world is always telling us that marriage is not necessary, it's just contrived, and it's not necessary for a relationship. And we know that that's different. The Bible verse, God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. This basic self-giving, self-initiated love is the love required in marriage and is the very love that will make Christian marriage a success.
I think the first and most important thing in any marriage is priorities. And it's very easy, I think most of you have young children, to get the priorities out of order. Obviously, as Christians, God has to be our first priority. We have to make that time to spend in communion with God. It can be done in many ways. You know, I love taking my walks by myself around this huge mile and a half block because it's my time. I can talk with the Lord and nobody's going to interrupt me. Everyone has a different time. Some people can get up really early in the morning. Some of us don't function in the morning, and they're better off doing it at noon or in the evening. So it a lot of this is a variable. We found Bible study is best for both of us in the late afternoon, before dinner. He can't do that with small children because they're already ready for dinner. But it's something that you have to work through. Obviously, since God is our first priority, and as we learn and grow in the Word of God, we learn more about what God's will is for our lives. His Word isn't filled with platitudes, and it's without error. It's complete and full of God's will for those who he has created. After God, though, the next person or the next on the line is your husband. This is something where it's very easy with small children to get mixed up. We start focusing on the children. I've known women who've let their kids sleep in their beds until they're 7 or 8 years old. And about all it does is destroy their marriages because the husband feels left out. Work or a job or anything else like that falls down the line. So your first priority has to be God. Your second priority has to be your husband. And your third priority is your children. It's part of the order from God from the beginning in Genesis 2, where God says, "It's not good for man to be alone. I will make a helper suitable for him." It's after woman is created that God says, "For this reason, man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, that they may become one flesh." Now, the best person to answer this is probably Pastor Kim, but I've never figured out why it talks about your mother and father when it's talking to Adam and Eve, who were created without a mother and father, but we'll go on beyond. That's my curious questions for the week when I start studying this. To be helpmates, to be one flesh, careful priorities and rich communication is necessary. To a large part, a married couple's experience of genuine oneness will be determined by the health of our communication. Nothing except for their union, their communication with God and through Christ is more important to the development of genuine oneness. And as you're married, the longer it goes, the deeper your dialogue. You know, we've been married a long time. And it wasn't even but just a, I think it was a week ago that he had to go up to Goleta for business, which is north of Santa Barbara. I said, "Hey, I'll drive with you." We had a grand time. We just yacked over nothing important. But we just enjoyed the time together. And so, you know, you can find ways to do this. We'll give you a couple of clues. Please excuse me. My nose didn't start growing.
Yeah, I think one of the things we have to remember is when we're looking at priorities, you notice we put that the spouse is the number two priority. It wasn't the family is the number two priority. And some people tend to run those two together and make that the second priority. That really is not the way God intended it to be. God intended it, the spouse to be your number two priority. The children are number three. So we have to always keep that in the forefront of our daily lives, because once we start running those together, we have sometimes families where the husband and wife are running kind of like parallel lives. They're not interacting with each other. They're interacting certainly as a family unit, but that's not always what the Lord wants us to be doing. And so to develop interests and things together, husband and wife, we have to have the right priorities set. From one of the practical standpoints is most of the husbands, they go off to work. And wherever they're working, typically there are going to be ladies there that also work at the same place, only it's at an unusual place. And let's face it, in the secular world, a lot of these ladies, they're on the make. They're looking, maybe they're not looking for a husband. Maybe they're just looking for a fling or something like that. But, you know, they're always dressed well. They have the makeup. They have the right clothes. And so I think sometimes the ladies have to remember that are at home with the children that, hey, you know what? Dad goes off to work. This is what he gets to see. He comes home. What does he see? Now, if you're running around all day long with just your sweatshirt on, you know, maybe that's not what you want.
Preferably the bottoms.
And I think a lot of this came from my mom. I know when my mom was talking to Linda, it was like, hey, let's have yourself put together when your husband comes home from work. That's one of the things. One of the things that were really critical for us as a couple was we need to have daily prayer as a couple. Now, it goes without saying that we have to have our own prayer time. We have to have our own Bible study. But I think what a lot of people miss out on, and that is extremely critical, is having prayer time with your spouse.
Every morning.
Every day, that should be a priority. We do it in the morning. We find that it starts the day better for us. Some couples may find that different times work better for them. But I think it helps both of us to keep focused on the things that are necessary. And it's just a nice time where you can, you know, I can say, you know, I appreciate Linda's heart that she has for this family that the wife just had, you know, hip surgery, and she's making a meal for them. And, you know, things like that. It's just a good way to encourage each other. And let's face it, when you're together praying, a lot of the, maybe if you had problems, a lot of the anger, a lot of the resentment that you may have had, that a lot of that goes away when you're praying together. So we just want to make sure that your praying sessions with your spouses doesn't turn into a lecture. One of the ways that sometimes that we do it is a bidding prayer. I don't know if you folks have done that, but one of us will think up of something that we need to pray praying for, and the other spouse will expound on that and pray for that. And that works really well. And of course, you have everything else you need to be praying for. Your children, your family, your parents, the extended family, your church. I mean, prayer time can be kind of long, but it's
longer.
Yeah, it can be long, but on the other hand, some of the stuff you can do in your prayer time by yourself, and sometimes it's just better to do it as a couple. Date nights. I know a lot of people talk about this, date nights with your spouse. This is one way to keep the focus on your spouse. How often you do this, where you go, or what you do, that's pretty flexible. I think if you're only doing it once a month, that's probably not enough. Maybe for some people, once a week is too much. But anyway, find somewhere in there that's going to work for you. It doesn't have to be expensive. When we were a young family, you know, we never had money. It was just, you know, Linda didn't work outside the home. We had the one income. So we never really had a lot of expendable cash. But it could be something simple as just having a cup of coffee and just going out and just having that time together. So you can be real creative on how you want to do that. Like one of the things we'll be doing in this month is our local college has a concert. It's $17 a piece, you know. It's not that much more than a movie. Now, we don't do that too much, but, you know, that's kind of fun. And one of the things that I did even when I was out of work, and there were several times where I was out of work for like over a year, one of the things I did is I still managed to do date nights. Actually, they weren't really nights. Linda was working. She had to go back to work. What I did was I would pack up a picnic. I had a small grill. And I would find a park that was close to her work. I'd get over to the place like a half hour early, and you can grill like hamburger or hot dogs or whatever you want to. Bring a salad, a couple drinks, and she gets off for lunch, usually an hour, and meets me at the park, and we have that hour together. And so it was pretty expensive. I mean, hot dogs, I mean, the kids, we buy
not
hot
healthy
dogs anyway. So, you know, that was just one of the ways that we came up with, and that worked really well for us.
The other thing is, if you live near to the park, you can go over to the park and take a sack lunch. One of the other things that sometimes what we'd do is we'd wait till the kids went to bed. We'd put a tablecloth out, we'd put a couple of candles, and just enjoy a dinner, date night at home. So, you know, all of these things are workable. Children are a precious gift from God, and they need the love and attention of their parents. But if we're not impressing Christ-centered goals for our children, we're failing as Christian parents. Our number one priority as parents is that these children become eternal praisers of the Lord. It is not that they become a great student and get a good job and earn lots of money. You know, that may look good to some other people, but the Lord doesn't care about that. He cares about their hearts. And so obviously, and I know with this church you work on that very hard, but it's really important. I'm in a Bible study right now with a number of older women. One of them is into her 90s. One of them had just passed away a couple weeks ago, was 90. We're talking, and some of these women are still grieving because they've lost their children to the secular world. Their children have good jobs. They make good money. They live a comfortable life, but they don't know the Lord. And it just grieves them terribly. Several of them have children that have divorced once or maybe twice because they just can't keep their eyes focused. Their children, you know, there was the emphasis, and this is something that did happen, you know, many years ago. You know, get good grades in school so that you can get into a good college, so you can get a good job, so you can make good money. But the heart isn't there. It's not bad to have, you know, an athlete or an artist or a musician or a dancer or anything. It's not bad in themselves, but it cannot supersede the important relationship with the Lord. Children are part of the legacy we leave behind. And when the children are born, it's time to start praying for their future spouses. I started praying for my daughter-in-laws when my children were born. And it was like when they came into our family, this was a gift. This was like the biggest present I ever had. And the thing is, God moved in my heart that I love them as if they were my own. And it's something interesting because God changes us. He works in us. And so I think that is one of those really, really critical things, is pray for your children's spouse starting now.
I know one of the things when you see skewed priorities for children is if you take a look at even Japan, the rate of suicide is so high. And the main reason, one, the pressure is to get great grades in school. Because if you don't get into the right college, you're not going to get the right job. If you get the right job, you're not going to make a living that's worthwhile. And so you see a lot of kids, if they're not getting into the right college, they end up in suicide.
We actually took foster son. At the time, it was an exchange student. We didn't find out he wasn't on a visa because he was essentially born here but taken back to Japan by his Japanese parents. He dropped out of school when he was 13 because the pressure had become too much, and his mother was afraid that he would become one of these children that would commit suicide. Now, God has a sense of humor in all of this, I know. He created us. But when he came to our house, and he stayed with us for, I think it was almost 7 years, and he still calls me Mom. If I talk to him on the phone or if he writes an email, it's always Mom. And when we emphasized with him that the most important thing is loving the Lord and knowing the Lord, and that, you know, a person's love is not contingent on performance. A person's love is contingent on who you are. So.
Yeah, and one of the difficulties that he went through is not, while he was in college, I believe, he got a note from his mom that one of his best friends in Japan had committed suicide. So it's happening to young people that have the pressure put on them that is the priority is completely skewed. We want to talk about ministry. Ministry is your fourth priority. And everyone has a responsibility of ministry. You're at home, your ministry is your children. You have neighbors. If you're at work, you have co-workers. If you're at school, you have people in school. Ministry is not an option for us. It's a commandment to us. And a lot of times it requires us to step out of our comfort zone.
This is something that he does amazingly well. And it's something I did not realize really the depth of it until recently. I think you all have heard the story of the police officer that went crazy, Christopher Dorner. I think it was probably close to 25 years ago. My husband carpooled with a lady that lived in the next town on their way to work. And Dell's husband was a police officer. And he shared the gospel with her. She really didn't have anything to do with it. And eventually he left. And he left that company in the early 90s, so it's a really long, long time ago. And we hadn't heard from Adele until probably about 6, 8 years ago. Her sister called and said, Adele's trying to find Tom. Do you have a number for him? And I said, sure. And so I gave him, you know, her cell number. And Adele wanted Tom to know that she had not only accepted Christ as her Lord and Savior, but she was deeply involved in a women's ministry at Crossroads in Simi Valley, Francis Chan's church. And how she remembered when he shared the gospel. But it went further. She had this heart for the police officers that the wives could pray for their husbands. And so she came to me and she had asked me to embroider some stuff for her. And she said, will you pray for us? Because this is going to be our first meeting. We're expecting maybe 30 or 35 people. And I'm going to give my testimony. She called me the next day. 400 women showed up. 400 police officers' wives. When I went back to school at the ridiculous age of 58 to get my degree in Christian ministry, there was a police officer then, and at the time, another officer was killed. He was a SWAT officer, and we were concerned because the SWAT training officer was our neighbor across the street. And I had asked the class if they would be praying for his family, and I remember this big black guy, and he was huge, coming up and wrapping his arms around me and sobbing and thanking me because it was his best friend. I didn't know that. You don't know when you're ministering to somebody. You just have to be brave enough to do so.
Yeah, I think a lot of times, yeah.
When we saw on, I don't know if you followed any of that about this Christopher Dorner, but they did have some great interviews with the Wives of Police Officers prayer group. And they were there with their Bibles open, explaining. It goes further and further and further each time, so you cannot be afraid.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times we may really not know how we may have impacted first. If Adele's sister had got a hold of me, I would have never known what happened to her and what things that she was doing. Not that it necessarily was... I needed to know that, but I think what we need to do is just to be faithful. We need to be faithful in our ministry, because a lot of times we will never know if you may have impacted a life. A great story is my mom. We were interned during World War II, and she became know the Lord when she was in high school. And so when she was interned with her family, you know, and a lot of people said, wow, that must have been pretty tough. She goes, no, are you kidding? I had all these people that were captive. I could witness to them, and they had nowhere else to go. You know, and that was such a great attitude. Well, I didn't realize that until when this student that we had staying with us, he gets a call from his younger brother. I'm bringing a small band out to U.S. to tour, but can you help me out because your English is better than mine? And so Paul says, sure. So he said, well, I want to be in Minnesota. So Paul says, okay, I'll fly into Chicago, catch another plane, get into Minnesota. So Paul hops on the plane. Now, Paul, you have to remember, college soccer player. He's got blonde streaks in his hair, you know. And so he's waiting for his flight in O'Hare. And an elderly Japanese couple comes up to him, start talking to him, and introduce himself. So the guy says, I just want to let you know that I'm a Christian, and I'd like to share my story with you. And he says, hey, I'm a Christian. He says, really? He goes, yeah, my dad's a pastor. He goes, oh, great. He goes, what church do you go to? Well, I go to a church over in California. It's San Fernando Holiness Church in Los Angeles. He goes, oh, you know, a good friend of mine goes to that church. I wonder if she's still there. So what's her name? Oh, Betty Kira. He goes, I stay with her son.
Well, actually, he said, that's grandma. He called her grandma by then.
And he says, really? He goes, yeah. He goes, well, how do you know Betty Kira? He goes, oh, when we were in camp in Arkansas, she led me to the Lord. I mean, so from the war to then, I don't even know how many people this guy's lives might have touched. But just because my mom brought this guy to know the Lord. So, you know, we never know. We really never know. Now, one of the things fifth on our priority list is work. And maybe, hey, it's important that we provide for the family. We're required to do that by our Lord. So, you know, we're not saying work is not important. We need to be providers. We need to be faithful providers. So that's not the question. It's just a matter of where the priorities are. And then after that, you can start folding in your extended families and friends and all that. But priorities, I think at the beginning, we've got to look at that every day just to make sure that we're going down this line, that our priorities are in line.
I learned early the difficulty of communicating on a close personal level with another person because we were from completely different backgrounds. My husband's parents and my parents were both from farming families. But my husband is, that's the only thing we had in common. He's well-ordered. He's calm. He rarely shows emotion. He's always thinking everything through carefully. Never lost his temper and I think prided himself a little on self-control. He didn't like any sort of confrontation, and he would acquiesce rather than disagree. On the other hand, I'm half Danish and half Irish. They say the personality of an Irishman, and I am quoting this, is pee and vinegar, only I'm using a more polite term. And a Dane is prideful, sarcastic, and they pride themselves on being educated. I was usually quick to give my opinion or something, and especially something I didn't agree with. But God's grace, we can overcome our heritage and we don't become in bondage to it. And we learn to communicate effectively. The first disagreement my husband and I had after a month of marriage was when I was trying to explain something to him, and I told you this earlier. No one in my family ever controlled their emotions. They just let it hang out. And I realized that that isn't the way that we need to communicate. We need to think carefully. When we're going like this to somebody, you need three fingers pointing back at yourself. So think this way first. I can honestly say, you know, this many years later, we have a grand time together. There are some times when we get into laughing we get to laughing over the most ridiculous, silly things. We laugh at what the grandchildren do. I never expected grandchildren. This was not in... My thing was keeping the boys in one piece and getting them through school. And so, you know, sometimes we don't look further ahead, you know, God willing, if God gives you that chance. And we do realize that good relationships are built by effective communication. It is critical.
Here are some biblical principles of communication.
It's Amos
3:3 says, "Can two walk together except they be agreed? Any two individuals who walk together continuously and harmoniously, striving toward the same goals, conducting their lives according to the same standards, giving mutual assistance, enjoying sweet fellowship with one another, you can be sure that they are in agreement. And if they are in agreement, they must have learned how to communicate." And you don't even know what kind of example that this sets for other couples and families that observe you. You know, if we are to be good examples of Christ's love, one of the ways of doing that is when other people are viewing you, how you conduct your personal life, how you conduct your family. Continuous, progressive harmony and agreement are impossible without good communication and getting deeper into our dialogues, not just the, you know, typical husband comes home, sports, weather, you know, news. We have to get deeper than that. God's scripture indicates that the truth about God is only known through revelation scripture. We have to be studying the scripture. Because this is the Lord's word. This is what he teaches, when he teaches us, what he expects of us, and it's critical. If God does not communicate with us, we can never really know him or have a close relationship with him. So scripture indicates that we have to know one another, we must be opened up and reveal ourselves to each other. Proverbs 23:7 says, "For as he thinks is his heart, so is he."
In his heart.
For as he thinks in his heart, so is he. A husband and wife cannot really know each other if they don't open up their hearts and are not open and honest with each other. Some of the guides for exercising openness and honesty. One, is it really true? Do I really have the facts? Often truths hurt, but is no reason for not speaking the truth in love. In love is pretty critical. Yeah, you could speak the truth, but if it comes off very hurtful, if it becomes nasty, then we're not presenting those things correctly. On the other hand, you don't want to dodge the issue or even lie about it. So we need to be truthful. And we need to be truthful constructively. This is what helps us with having a proper relationship. Ephesians 4:29, "Let no unwholesome word proceed out of your mouth, but only such a word is good for edification according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those who hear." Is what I would say profitable? Would it be profitable? Would it help or would it hurt? Proverbs 20:15, "There is gold and an abundance of jewels, but the lips of knowledge are a more precious thing." Romans 15:1-3, "Now we who are strong ought to bear the weaknesses of those without strength and not just please ourselves. Each of us is to please a neighbor for his good, to his edification." For even Christ did not please himself. But as it is written, the reproaches of those who reproached you fell on me. Third, is this a proper time to say something, or would it be better to wait? Proverbs 15, 23, 20, and 28. A man has joy in an appropriate answer, and how delightful is a timely word. The heart of the righteous ponders how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours out evil things. Proverbs 25, 11 through 12. Like apples of gold and settings of silver is a word spoken in the right circumstances. In Proverbs 8, 13. He who gives and answers before he hears, it is folly and shame to hear him.
It's very interesting, though, if you're studying the word Proverbs, go through there and see how much it talks about thought and what you say. There's a lot in there. The other thing is my attitude right? It's very easy to want to have an attitude of my way. Ephesians 4, 15 and 31. But speaking the truth in love, we're to grow up in all aspects into him who is the head, even Christ. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you, along with malice. Be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, just as God in Christ also forgiven you. 1 Corinthians 16, 14. Let all you do be done in love. And Titus, study Titus, it's worth it. 3, 1 through 2. Remind them to be subject to rulers, to authorities, to be obedient, to be ready for every good deed, to malign no one, to be peaceable, gentle, showing every consideration for all men. The next are the words that I use, the best way of saying it. This is my problem. I always say it backwards. Proverbs 12:25. Anxiety in a man's heart weighs it down, but a good word makes it glad. Proverbs 16:23. The heart of the wise instructs his mouth and adds persuasiveness to his lips. And Ecclesiastes 12:10. The preacher sought to find delightful words and to write words of truth correctly. The next one is, have I prayed about this matter and am I trusting in God to help me? Proverbs 3, 5, and 6 says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him and he will make your paths straight. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. Colossians 4, 2-6. Devote yourselves to prayer, keeping alert in it with an attitude of thanksgiving, praying at the same time for us as well, that God will open up to us a door for the word, so that we may speak forth the mystery of Christ, for which we have been imprisoned, that I may make it clear in the way that I ought to speak. Conduct yourselves with wisdom towards outsiders, making the most of the opportunity. Let your speech always be with grace, as though seasoned with salt, so that you will know how you should respond to each person. And then to Psalms 19:14. Let the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. No couple can really become one without openness and honesty and communication. At the same time, we must be the right kind of openness and honesty. If not, it will destroy rather than enhance good relations. It's important to confess when you're wrong and ask forgiveness. And boy, I had to do that a lot with both my husband and my sons. And I always have to appreciate him. I can remember one time when Jared was learning to drive, and somehow I got stuck in the back seat. And I thought he was drifting to one side. I can still remember exactly the street we were on and everything. And I went to say, Jared, forgetting that I wasn't in the front seat. And so I ended up smacking him up the side of the head. And it was not intentional. I forgot where I was, and I went to grab the steering wheel. He wasn't a happy camper and marched into the house. And Tommy very carefully waited until he was gone and said, he wasn't drifting. I think you owe him an apology. Well, by that time I knew that, but I appreciated the fact that he didn't tell me what an idiot I was in front of my son. And it gave me the opportunity to go to Jared and say, I'm sorry, I was wrong.
By definition, in marriage, communication is a bi-directional activity. It is not one person saying it and taking it up all the time. That would be more of a speech. So communication has to be...
Also in prayer.
...bidirectional. And the discussion should always be loving, respectful, non-confrontational. We have to keep in mind that each of us have strengths, different weaknesses. And we should always strive for meaningful and in-depth discussions to build intimacy. And we have to remember that men and women have a different perspective on many times on different things. Women are typically right-brained. You know, they a lot of their things, they work on a level of feeling and emotion. Guys, most of the time, are left-brained. They're out there processing facts and data and stuff like that. And so, inherently, those two don't really match up that well. So we have to keep that in mind, that a lot of times what we may be thinking, it's being perceived differently by the spouse. You know, I suppose there are a few people I've met in this world that are pretty even, left brain, right brain. And you don't find that many of those type people. So you just keep that in mind.
I'm having a laugh about this because he tries to explain to me a lot of what he does with work. He's a technical sales engineer. He engineers products that go primarily in space equipment, aircraft, and medical. And he's trying to explain this to me, and it's like, you know, I can remember one time going with him to China Lake Naval Weapons Station, and that's exactly what they make, weapons. And it's a closed facility. It's several hundred square miles in the middle of the Mojave Desert, and you have to have, you know, like super clearance, big whatever, you know. And so we were on our way to Mammoth, and I said, I'll go with you, and then I'll just go sit at a restaurant somewhere and have some coffee or something. Well, they let me on the base. And so I said, okay, fine, well, I'll just sit in the car and wait for you. I can read. No problem. Do any of you guys ever see the movie Independence Day? Do you remember the creepy creature in Area 51, the doctor that was investigating? Those are all from China Lakes. One of these guys comes running out, knocks on the window, and I'm going, okay, yes. He goes, you got to come in here. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, my husband's had a heart attack. And I go rushing in. He goes, I got to show you this. This is really cool. It was when he told me to put on these goggles in case something blew up. I thought I was in the wrong spot. But we do think differently. To him, it was the most important thing in the world to show me these weapons they were creating meant nothing to me. Mishandled anger is one of the principal hindrances to communication. And anger actually manifests itself in two ways. One is blowing up, but the other is clamming up. Both are wrong. When anger itself is not sinful, Jesus was angry when he was in the temple and he took down the money changers. You may not want to stir up a fuss or upset the other person when they hurt you. The Bible does tell us to turn the other cheek. We feel the other person will get angry or will get rejected, so we cover up our thoughts and refuse to discuss differences of opinion. But those differences of opinion can begin to pile up or get blown out of proportion and form a large individual, indivisible barrier between you. You may have to wait a few minutes to calm down. You know that proverbial thing about count to 10? It's very real. If you count to 10, at least you get to to be able to get your mind on straight. Don't wait for days. It's not worth doing that. Ephesians 26 says, be angry, yet do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger, and do not give the devil an opportunity. If you carry the anger, it will become sin. But be careful. Ephesians 5:3-4 says, but immorality or any impurity or greed may not be even named among you as is proper among saints. Let there be no filthiness, silly talk, coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks. Philippians 4:8 says, finally, brethren, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is of good repute, if there is any excellence, and if anything worthy of praise, dwell on these things. Mean-spirited anger has no place in a Christian life. Now, I want to explain one thing about the difference between blowing up and clamming up. There was somebody in my family that his way of controlling an argument was by clamming up and walking away. He won. It's not him, by the way. He would just, I'm not going to talk to you because you're upset, and walk away, which did very little but make me even more upset. It's important that you're able to discuss things through.
Self-control is a requirement for good communication. I know we've all seen people, they have short fuses, they get angry very quickly, and they justify it by saying, you know, well, that's the way they are, they're being honest, or they just make a joke of it. These people are not communicating according to God's guidance. We've all known people who have short fuses. I have a hard time sometimes understanding how adult can have really short fuses. And maybe because I'm a little bit different than that, but it can be very difficult for people, especially if they came from a background of people that were angry all the time, or they got angry so quickly, and pretty soon they start pulling away, and so it can these type of experiences that you have had could be hindering your own communication, because you just don't want to upset the apple cart and get someone really angry, or so a lot of times we just avoid communication.
My grandmother used to tell me, and I can remember it as clearly, and my grandmother died when I was 7 years old, so I still remember, sticks and stones can break your bones, but names can never hurt you. That's not true. Names hurt. Scripture says words can be dangerous and painful and destructive. Like the piercing of a sword or a cup of poison or burning fire. That says a lot. And so I think it's really important that we exercise self-control in how we speak. Proverbs 12:18. There is one who speaks rashly like the thrust of a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. Proverbs 16:27. You know, I know you guys, some of you are writing this down. I do have it written down somewhere. I'll try to email it to Jen if she wants to pass it out to you. Proverbs 16:27 says, a worthless man digs up evil, while his words are like scorching fire. James 3:5-9. And oh my goodness, this is my verse, because to me it says so much. So also is a tongue, a small part of the body, and yet it boasts of great things. See how a great forest is set aflame by such a small fire? And the tongue is a fire, a very world of iniquity. The tongue is among our members that which defiles the entire body and sets it on fire, the course of our life. It sets it on fire by hell. For every species of beasts and birds, of reptiles, creatures of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by the human race, but no one can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil, full of deadly poison. This is the part. With it we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth comes both blessings and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. Because of a lack of self-control, many wounds have been inflicted. Many a painful blow has been struck. Many a marriage has been poisoned or sabotaged. Hateful, vindictive, bitter, cutting words shut down every line of communication.
But controlling the negative is not enough. We must put off certain things, and we also must put on certain things. We must replace sinful practices with righteous practices. This means our judgmental, critical, demanding, officious, demeaning, bitter spirit must be replaced with charitable, encouraging, forbearing, accepting spirit. Discuss issues. Don't ever go back on thing over things. We've probably heard this a lot of times in conversations or arguments. You'll hear these phrases, well, you always do this, or you never do this. Those are things that, those are phrases we do not want to. If you have forgiven someone a sin against you, never bring it back up.
And the other side of this is something that we talked a little bit about, was our ability to control ourselves when we're tempted to retreat into silence or pout is equally important to good communication. And I have to laugh, and I think I can go ahead and say this because my son did preach about this one time. I can remember. It was before Jen and Kim were married. He was preaching at Alhambra Baptist Church, and we were sitting way in the back, and I think Brian Kosabayashi was sitting on the other side of me. I can still remember this. Well, a number of years earlier, Kim had come home from school, and that day had been a terrible day. I'd gone up into his room to get something, and there were ants from one end of the room to the other. There were a bunch of open Coke cans, and it was a disaster. So as soon as he walks in the door, what do? You need to go clean your room. It's a disaster, and get rid of all the trash and the Coke cans. I'm busy. I don't really care if you're busy. You're going to clean your room first. I have a paper due. He had a bad, bad habit of doing his term papers the night before, always. I said, I don't really care. You know, I don't care if you fail the class. You've got to clean your room first. Well, the argument got heated. And it's going like this. And it's as much my fault as it was his. But his way of dealing with it was, you're losing your temper, Mom, and I'm not going to discuss it with you until you calm down. Oh, yeah, that's a good thing to say to an Irishman. Well, eventually, yes, his room got cleaned. He tells this story at Alhambra Baptist and admits that I was right. So what does mother do? Like a good mother? I go, yes! And it's this cathedral-type building, and the sound echoes, and like 20 rolls up, turn around and go, oh, that light in back there. So you can be embarrassed for a long time after when you do something really dumb, just as a caution. And it isn't self-control when you walk away. It is actually controlling. It can be really frustrating. The other thing is, if you respond in silence, if you manipulate with crocodile tears, you know, I learned that early on in our marriage. Don't manipulate with crocodile tears. It drove him crazy. They're not tears of sympathy. They're not tears of sorrow. They're not tears of sorrow over sin. They're just simply tears of self-pity because someone disagreed or disapproved of what you did or said. So,
if we learn these things, we can accept each other for who we are. We can be helpmates, not judges or condemners. This does not mean condoning error or evil, but pointing out evil or sin must be done in love and concern. The Apostle Paul tells us to bear with and make allowance for each other. He's not condoning sin, but encouraging an attitude of complete commitment, loyalty, fidelity, sensitivity, and selfishness. He is encouraging a love for the other person that bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things.
And one of the most important things with good communication is good listening. Communication is a two-way street. You have to have somebody who speaks and somebody who hears. It's like sending an email. It does no good to send somebody an email if you don't get the answer back. It involves sending and receiving. Talking to someone who isn't paying attention or listening is essentially kind of a waste of time. You know the kind, you know, you're talking to somebody. Kids do that a lot. And they give you, you know, the yawn or the blank stare, and you really get to the point you don't want to talk to them because they're not paying any attention. Anyway, there's an old story about a pastor who tries to sell his donkey. And he tells the prospective buyer that the donkey is great and he'll do whatever he wants. Whatever the man asks, just talk to him gently. So the man agrees and he pays him the money and he takes a hold of the donkey and he tries to get him to walk down the road and the donkey won't move. And he finally gets frustrated and he runs back to the pastor and he says, "You told me all I had to do was talk to this donkey gently and he would do whatever I asked." And the pastor goes, and he walks down the road and he picks up a 2x4 and he clocks the donkey right between the eyes. And he goes, "Now talk to him gently." "You told me gently." He goes, "Yeah, but first you got to get his attention." Well, a lot of times, good listening involves getting somebody's attention. Have you ever noticed with your kids, if you're yelling at them across the room, they're not paying attention. But if you're right in front of them, facing them, the difference. If your husband or child has your undivided attention, if you're in the middle of, if your husband's asking you and he wants to talk about something and you're changing diapers, sure, say, "I'll be right there." But if you're not in the middle of something, you need to give full attention as best you can. And don't tune him out like the donkey. Have you ever watched in the store a kid that's whining and carrying on and "I want" and the whole thing? A mother that's, you know, talking on her cell phone or ignoring the child, the kid's just going to get louder and whinier. But if you get right down into his face and ask him to explain to you what he's trying to communicate, usually he'll calm down and explain it in words, and you don't have such a problem. I always used to have the rule, I can't hear you when you're whining. My ears shut down when you're whining. And they learn pretty quickly. The other thing, and this has nothing to do with it, but if they're asking for something and you give it to them, they will continue to beg from then on. So the most important thing is saying, you know, if you go into the store and saying, "On the way out, we will get this," fine, as long as you don't ask for something. But if this, sometimes we had to say to them, "This time, no special treats," because we just have to get the shopping done. Proverbs 25 says, "Counsel in the heart of a man is like water in a deep well, but a man of understanding draws it out." Have any of you guys ever used a pump, a hand pump? My parents were born on a farm, and they had hand pumps. They didn't have, you know, flowing water lines. In order to get water out of a pump, you have to prime it. And so most pumps would have some sort of cup hanging off that had a little bit of water left from the time before. You pour the water into it as you pump, and it primes it, and it allows the water to come up. We can learn a lot from others, but sometimes you have to prime the pump. You may have to ask questions. You have to stop talking. You have to listen. Good listening with interest helps you to draw out the other person, just like priming the pump. Oh, I would have been so sorry. Never mind. Okay. Good listening also involves making sure you really understand what the other person is saying. If you don't understand it, ask questions. A lot of times you can be really, I misunderstood. What we think a person means and what they actually mean can be two different things. And the only example I can give is when Kim was a year old, my husband's kidneys started to fail. Kim was hospitalized that same week, and they told me he may not live. When I came to visit my husband early that morning, they were making up his bed for somebody new, and I asked the nurse at the nurse's station where he was, and I remember as clear as a bell, she looked at the other nurse. The doctor will have to tell you. I passed out on the floor, cold. Hit my head on the counter, actually. I was sure my husband had died. I didn't ask questions and I didn't clarify. I just went down like a rock. As it is, after I came to, she explained he was in ICU. He had had a cardiac arrest as a result of the test that they had given him. And this is as a side that has nothing to do with it, but I do remember going when I finally left that day and went back in the car, bowing before the Lord before I even went out and saying, I'm all yours, Lord. I cannot save my child and I cannot save my husband. The interesting thing was they were able to get some of the tests that they could see and they found out how to treat it, and his kidneys didn't fail for another 20 years. With Kim, it was one of those awe moments where I think we were in at that time into the organic, natural whole things, and it was one of the natural foods that had caused these continual bouts of pneumonia. And as soon as I put him on regular milk, he was fine, and he never had a problem since. So sometimes, you know, we have to learn to look to the Lord and trust the Lord rather than thinking I can control my lifespan or my children's through proper this, that, and other. Good communication means saying I love you. Tommy calls me every day at work and says hi, and he tells me he loves me. And if I call at home, he always says, is this my sweetums? He can tell it by his phone. And it makes me feel good down to my toes. Learn to laugh. I can remember it was that time in the hospital when he got home. We got into a water fight before he even got in the house. I have no idea what it was about. It was just one of those things that broke the tension. We were laughing hysterically, having a grand time. I do remember one time when I was having one of those hormonal cranky days. You know how that, it just comes on you. And he said something and I snapped back. And he snapped back at me, and I was so absolutely stunned. Have you ever been to a funeral where you're crying and your laughing gets mixed up? You almost have to cover your mouth because you're laughing and you don't know why, because everything's all mixed up. It's the same thing as when you get the best present in the world and you start to cry because you're so happy. You get mixed up. So what do? I started to laugh. I have no idea why. I don't even know what the argument was about. And I can remember him saying, well, that shows you don't take me very seriously. And it wasn't that. I was just so stunned. And he starts to laugh. We have no idea what the argument was about. We were laughing so hard, the kids came in and go, what's the joke?
Here are some practical hindrances to communication. And it could involve a large array of things, but most notably, television, computer, children, jobs, overcommitment. It is important to have time alone daily to talk. When we lived in Moore Park in our first home, we were fortunate that the shower in our room was a large shower. So a lot of times when things were really busy, Lynn and I would shower together. That way we could talk. The kids won't be there. And we got it done both at the same time. Can't do it with small showers, but we were fortunate we had a really large shower. But as things go, one day one of our pastors calls our home, and this is one of the senior pastors, one of the elderly ones, calls and asks for me. And one of the younger boys Josh picked it up, and he said, nope, he can't come to the phone now. They're both, my mom and dad are both in the shower. So, I don't even know what he was thinking at the other end, other than, you know, we were pretty...
He was kind enough never to say anything.
Yeah, we were pretty embarrassed, even though he never said anything, but... But oddly enough, it, you know, those times did give us you know, a few minutes of just uninterrupted time just to talk. So, you know,
it's really hard to be angry when you're naked.
Yeah, but you know, there are a lot of hindrances to communication, and even more so in the technical world. So we have to keep those things in mind and just keep our priorities straight.
We're getting towards the end. We do have to understand, too, that men and women are equal in the sight of God, but they're not the same, and they have different God-ordained roles. Submission is a really hard thing to understand. My grandmother, who was born in 1882, was a college professor. My mother was a teacher and college-educated, and it was really hard for me to understand submission. Yet we submit to our parents, we submit to the government by obeying the laws, we submit to our school administrators, to our teachers, to our pastors. So submission really isn't being a doormat or uneducated or without opinion or useless. Or usefulness. Submission is something that we do out of our own heart because it's what God has presented to us is our job.
And we had mentioned that each of us has, we have our strengths and we have our weaknesses. And the Lord expects us to use our strength in our house. Like in our household, Linda is significantly more organized than I am. You know, guys sometimes tend to be kind of big picture guys. Well, that doesn't keep the house picked up and all that. So she's very good at organizing things in the household and keeping things filed correctly and keeping everything orderly. And in a house full of, you know, young children, that's pretty critical stuff. And and pretty much it's a pretty much full-time job for a mom. On the other hand, I don't do paperwork well. I don't do paperwork at work well. But I do cook. And so one of the things I enjoy doing is cooking. So a lot of times we'll put together our weekly menu, and I'll do the shopping, and I'll do a lot of the cooking. But things such as lawn mowing and stuff, I can't really do because I have such terrible allergies. In fact, Linda likes being outdoors and doing that. I have to close up the house when she's mowing the lawn, otherwise I'll just have a terrible time. So, you know, we do have things that we can do to help each other out. Dividing up household chores is not necessarily just a guy thing or a girl thing. It's whatever we can do best to help each other out. One of the I know there are times when the boys will call up and ask mom about something about their car. Or I'll get a call late at night, and I got one from, this is before Kim and Jen were married, from Kim. It must have been 10 o'clock at night. We're already in bed, you know, watching news, ready to go to bed, and I get a call from Kim, and says, hey, do you have your recipe for, you know, teriyaki salmon? Yes, I do. Well, no, I need that because I want to cook that for Jen. I said, why could I want this tomorrow? Because we're ready to go to bed. Well, I want to cook that tonight. I said, really? Do you have any ingredients? No, I don't know what the recipe is. You know, it is a little
different.
Which is
really funny because the next night he calls me and asks me something about changing the oil in the car.
So it is a little odd, but hey, you know what? It works for us. So, a budget, pretty critical for young families. There are probably a ton of books and things and people who teach on that, but having a basic budget is pretty important. Most of us are never in a position where we just have an unending supply of money that we don't worry about budgets. We need to have budgets. We have to have budgets that are Christ-centered. I don't know how you come about in deciding to do tithing and offerings. There's a difference between the two. As a family, that should be a decision that the husband and wife makes. Tithing is basically your 10% that you give to the Lord. And you know, a lot of people think that tithing 10% is something that you work toward. Actually, tithing is where you start and work up. So we have to kind of keep that in mind. That's what really the Lord expects of us. Offerings are things that are above and beyond our tithing. So if we want to put together an offering for thankful for someone's birthday or whatever it be. So finances can be a critical issue in almost any family, how you spend your money. It's really not your money, it's God's money. We need to have a good understanding and good communication is really the only way we can do that with our spouses.
One thing to understand too with this is there are sometimes where you're not going to make your tithe. You're going to have issues that will come up. We have worked always towards it. We've had enormous medical issues most of our lives that have taken a good portion of our finances. And there's sometimes where I've actually had to go, okay, I either pay the bill, the medical bill, or I give to the church. If I don't pay the medical bill, it will not continue. And because of the medications he takes because of his transplant, if we don't pay the bill, he doesn't get the anti-rejection medication, which is beyond affecting health. It's a death sentence. Well, sometimes you have to think about those things carefully. And, of course, with us, it's what else can we cut from? Most of our food we make from scratch at home. We don't buy prepared things. And so, you know, you work through each of those issues.
I know there are going to be disagreements, especially when we start talking about tithes, offerings, or even major purchases. But we have to make sure that our discussions are Christ-centered, that we pray about them, and work through those. And we're, you know, contributing to the Lord's work. I mean, I don't know if there's anything more important than that. So just keep in mind what our priorities are. And then, two, sometimes there may be issues about, you know, should a woman work outside the home or should they not work because they have children? You know, those are always good questions. But there's nothing in the Bible that says a woman should not work outside the home. There are a number of examples. Lydia, Priscilla, there's the superwoman in Proverbs 31. They all worked outside the home. Now, having said that, if you have children, then you have to think about what your priorities are. You know, we made a decision when we started having children that if possible, we didn't want mom working outside the home while the children were young. And we just tried to make do with a single income. And yes, we didn't get to do a lot of things that a lot of families got to do, you know. our idea of a vacation was maybe we go camping somewhere. You know, we weren't doing these, oh, well, let's just fly off to D.C. and we'll get to see the Smithsonian and, you know, do all that. We never did those. But, you know, we had fun. But things were kind of financially scaled back. But and then when our youngest, when Josh was in school, then Linda went back to work part-time. While the kids were in school, she would work part-time. So that worked out really well from our perspective. And yes, yeah, we probably would be in a better position now financially if she had worked all the way through, but we felt it was important that the kids have her full attention when they're young. You know, it's bad enough dad's away at work, but it would have been really tough with mom and dad both being away.
I know of two mothers that are in executive positions who left their children before they were 3 months old, and they were raised in preschool situations. And they're both mildly autistic and struggling terribly with forming relationships because there's no one there to hold them. They were left to cry in a cradle or a crib. Preschools and daycares simply will not discipline or teach or guide or love your children in the same way you will. I remember myself, the terrors of being in preschool. I was 4 years old. I remember the kid in front of me mouthed off. The teacher blamed me. I told her it wasn't me, and it wasn't. She locked me in a closet. And I can still remember the fear.
Linda really started going back to full-time work is when I started having more problems with my kidney function. And when they started to fail more significantly, and I had to go on dialysis and stuff. So she went to work full-time, which, you know, it worked well for us. We never had a lot of things when we were young, our family. Because, you know, some of the boys' friends, yeah, they came from money, so, you know, they had all the toys that, you know, more affluent families had. But our guys really never got to have too much of that.
But, I think they were happy.
But on the other hand, you know, they're out there figuring out ways to be outside and hurt themselves. And do things like that. So that was always pretty much fun for boys to do.
So really, we have a responsibility to communicate our concerns, our ideas, our thoughts, our needs. With good communication, we can work through most differences of opinions. Another thing, submission does not mean you must do what your husband asks if it's against the word of the Lord in the Bible. One example I heard from one woman was her husband had asked the wife to sign tax form that had untruths in it, and she refused to do so because it was lying, and because, just as Jesus said, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. Another example was a husband who wasn't a Christian wanted his wife to join him in worshiping in a non-Christian church. That's one of the reasons why it's critical to be married to, when you shouldn't be dating, and it's something you need to teach your children, not to date somebody who is not a Christian, because it can be a really difficult situation. About yoking yourself with an unbeliever, you guys know that verse. You guys had asked a couple of questions that could probably, most of them we probably hit upon, but there were some of them. One of them was about a husband who doesn't help enough and how do you find time for yourself. The fact of the matter is I had very little time to myself. I spent more time at hospitals and picking up pieces, and it just didn't end up. But I learned, I love to read, and I had some, you know, I would have my corner that I would go and read and read my books, and that was my time. Um, we were kind of in a unique situation with our marriage because we had an ethnocentric church. It was Japanese, and I didn't have any friends there. Most of the ladies there had known each other since they were small, and I was the evil meanie who stole their prize bachelor. So I really didn't spend a lot of time there. Times have changed. I mean, we all got over that, but when we were younger. There were times when I was exhausted, and I would lay a blanket out in the middle of the living room floor, two kids on one side, two kids on the other, and I would fall asleep like that because then I would know who woke up and went flying out the door to go play. We had a park across the street, and we were in the middle of nowhere. I mean, literally the nowhere. And so we had to kind of... They didn't hesitate to just go off. It's not like it is when you live in the city. We live in the country. There were a couple of other things, though. One thing is, when we got... the first thing is organize. I think the most important thing in a household is get rid of everything and anything that simply isn't necessary. Use boxes or bins and store them with labels. Get a filing cabinet and put every piece of paper in the filing cabinet that needs to go, and everything else goes into the trash can. It's not worth it to save everything because it just makes your house a disaster area. The second thing is, when we have problems, when I get overwhelmed, and when I was working and Tom was working, we had all this. We had what we called work parties on Saturday. I'd make a long list. You know, empty trash, wash the dishes, clean the counters, wash the kitchen floor, vacuum the living room. I mean, I separated out to rooms. And the kids would sign up for whatever they wanted to do first. They would just initial which one they'd do first. Now, they learn really quickly. If you empty the trash first, and then you go down to the seventh most fun thing to do. And they learned that it wasn't all that great. When the little ones were really little, we would kind of separate it out that these are chores that the baby can do type thing. And so we had a work party. We could get the house and the yard spotless in a couple of hours if all of us worked together. And it just, you know, there were times when it was hysterical. I can remember one time going, what are the kids doing? I went in the bathroom, and they had Ajax from head to toe. They are buck naked in the shower, having this grand time. Eventually, the shower got really clean, but... that's not exactly how you use the Ajax. It's not supposed to go on you. But, you know, they really did try, and at least we got the basics done. We always had, you know, some sort of cubby or bins for all the toys to go into so that we didn't trip on them going in and out. We taught them in fact, this was the worst offender to start with, laundry. We taught them, we had open laundry bins and told them, this is a basketball hoop. Make the basket. And so when they would take off their clothes, they would go into the laundry and not all over the floor, because we just made it a game. So there's just little ideas of things that you can do. Check under the beds. They'll hide things there. You kind of had to learn to have a sense of humor about it, but they were really good about helping with things like that. There is an excellent book. If you've never read it, it's worth it. It's called More Hours in My Day, and it's written by Emily Barnes. And her name is spelled Emilie. If you look it up, it always goes wrong. You can't find it. It's an older book. I have heard Emily Barnes in an 8-hour seminar. She's an amazing woman. But it really does give you some very good ideas how to organize your household and your day so that you have more hours. It really is important. I mean, with my kids, it was like, we sat there and figured out, we still have an argument over the numbers, but I say we saw over 3,000 ball games. He says over 4,000. It's a lot. It's a lot of wasted time is what it is. But if you're going to spend time at your kids' ball games, if you're going to spend time, you know, doing all these other things, then you have to kind of find ways of shortening it. The book of Galatians tells us, walk by the Spirit, and you will not carry out the desires of the flesh. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, and gentleness and self-control. And that's something that really is worth living by. The other thing I was going to show you, this is a person who says he's not organized, right? This is the shopping list around the house. Market, Costco, Lowe's or Home Depot, menu for the week, pharmacy, and in here goes anything else. And he has this on the counter all the time. So when he runs out of something or when he knows he needs something, he always writes it in here. Little place to check it off in case I go shopping, just in case I forget. But it's sometimes it's something silly. It's just something you put up on an Excel spreadsheet any way you want to. But it is worth it because if you're like me and you've got like 685 notes in your purse, you're going to forget something. That was just a thought. So thank you guys very, very much. If you have questions, go for it. And I'm so sorry. I didn't have a cold until yesterday. Okay.
I'm sure you guys are all blessed. I'm listening here just from 44 years of marriage and family. I think we have to end now. maybe just make sure you guys email your prayer requests out to the rest of the people in your small group, and then we'll see you next week.